as biryanis, samosas, and kebabs unique to each region of India. Although Muslims throughout India observe this holy month, the main hubs of Ramadan celebrations in the country include Delhi, Maharashtra, Uttar Pradesh, Kerala, and Hyderabad. Similarly, in Pakistan, Ramadan is celebrated with equal zeal and enthusiasm. In Ramadan, the street vendors begin to set up their stalls before dawn. At Sehri, the time before sunrise, vendors sell traditional stew, bread, and yogurt drinks. Meanwhile, preparations for iftar commence hours before the breaking of the fast. As iftar approaches, the bazaars come alive with vibrant outlets selling savory treats. The sights and sounds of these bustling bazaars during Ramadan are a hallmark of the festive atmosphere that pervades throughout the holy month. Observing Ramadan entails not only fasting throughout the day, but also participating in communal prayer rituals at local mosques.
Muslims in subcontinent, especially in Pakistan, India, Bangladesh, where the Muslims are in large numbers, they try to connect to their God and get closer to their creator by spending money in form of charity. Charity is a very important and integral part of our culture. In subcontinent, people people distribute free food among Muslims and non-Muslims as well. They distribute free drinks. They give them free dresses, free clothes. Sometimes they try to help poor people to pay the feces of children of underprivileged persons. So the concept of charity rises in the month of Ramadan. This is a very unique thing in our subcontinent, and this also has been exported from our region to the rest of the world. Especially, I see these charity events in United Kingdom and Europe and Australia. So yeah, this charity thing is very important and highlighted during the Ramadan.
Charitable acts such as donating to the poor, feeding the hungry, and offering money are also an integral part of the Ramadan celebrations in these two countries.
In the picturesque Himalayan valley, the holy month of Ramadan is celebrated with great reverence and devotion. The entire region comes alive with a sense of celebration and joy. In Kashmir, the observance of Ramadan is marked by unique customs and traditions that reflect the rich cultural heritage of the region. The tradition of giving is deeply ingrained in the culture of the valley, and during the holy month, the spirit of generosity is heightened with people donating generously to charitable causes.
During the holy month of Ramadan in the Muslim-majority region of Kashmir, markets can be seen bustling with activity as locals prepare for the month-long fast. Contrary to the subcontinent, the business establishments in the valley close at iftar times and people prefer to break their fast at home. Dates imported from various parts of the world are highly sought after and form an important part of the iftar meal. Households stock up on large quantities of chicken, mutton, and fruits as they are a mandatory part of the Ramadan delicacies. The tradition of Sahar Khans, or human alarm clocks, is still preserved in the region despite modern advancements. Sahar Khans take the streets in the early morning hours to beat drums, gongs, and shofars to wake up people for Sehri, the early morning meal before fasting. However, in this region marred by decades-long conflict, families that have suffered the loss of their loved ones celebrate the holy month differently. The conflict has led to the demise or disappearance of many breadwinners, leaving their families unable to afford even the most basic meals for iftar or sehri. As a result, numerous widows and wives of disappeared men rely on alms and the generosity of people during Ramadan. Special prayers are held in hopes of a resolution to the conflict and the return of peace to the region.
In Afghanistan, the entire country comes together to celebrate the holy month of Ramadan, which is seen as a time of establishing a closer connection with God. Several days ahead of Ramadan, most Afghans spend their off-work hours dedicated to shopping for groceries and preparing for the holy month ahead. While many spend the nights in mosques engaging in prayers, it's also considered a duty to assist the less fortunate. And it's common to find individuals distributing cooked meals after breaking their fasts.
In Afghanistan, the first day of the holy month of Ramadan is marked as a public holiday. As is the case of many other Muslim nations, during daylight hours, all restaurants and cafes are shuttered, television networks abstain from airing any music, and people avoid listening to music. The preparation of traditional foods is a significant part of Ramadan, with Afghans preparing special dishes such as mantu, dumplings filled with meat and onions, kabuli polo, rice with lamb and raisins, and shir khorma, a sweet milk, and vermicelli pudding. Additionally, dishes such as the special Afghan pickle, chutney, bolani, dates, and jalabi are commonly found on dining tables during iftar. For Afghan Muslims, night prayers in the mosque form a significant part of the holy month. Ramadan is also a time for charity and giving back to the community.
In South Asia, we have a very unique recitation of, you know, religious poetry, which is called Qawwali. Qawwali and the Sufi songs. The Sufi songs are, you know, closely related with Ramadan, because they are about, you know, holy figures. They are about God the Almighty. The songs are about, you know, respected historical figures of Islamic history. So the Qawwali songs, you know, are very popular in our region, and people always attend gatherings of this Qawwali recitation and Qawwali Qawwali events. And, you know, this also has been taken from subcontinent to the rest of the world, and it's popular among Muslims these days, as social media has become very among masses around the world. So these songs are being listened in large numbers, and millions of views are being seen on the YouTube and other, you know, other streaming sites. The other thing I want to discuss is the concept of Chand Raat. Chand Raat is the night before the Eid, the end of holy month of Ramadan, and they are being celebrated with great colors. People, you know, have gatherings at their homes. And the girls, you know, they make henna on their hands and wear good, nice clothes, and, you know, make tasty foods at their home. So they, you know, they all celebrate Chand Raat with very, you know, vibrant colors. And this also has been, you know, transported to the rest of the world.
Afghans are known for their hospitality and generosity. And during the month of Ramadan, this spirit is amplified. Muslims throughout the country engage in acts of charity, providing food and other basic necessities to the needy, orphans, and the less fortunate.
You're listening to The Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Listen to The Subcontinent every Monday here on IRIB English Radio.
Now, to have more insight on this, we are joined by academic Mr. Ahmed Al-Fagh from the central Indian state of Maharashtra. Thank you for joining us, sir. Now, Mr. Al-Fagh, how has the celebration of Ramadan in the subcontinent influenced broader trends in Islamic culture and tradition, both regionally and globally?
So, as we know that Ramadan is approaching us, and largely the traditions that are followed throughout the Muslim countries and the Islamic world, they are largely the same. If I wish to figure out a single or a few of them where the Indian subcontinent is different from the rest of the Islamic world, So there is the celebration of Chand Raat. So basically the night of the sighting of the moon is treated very differently in the subcontinent. So what we have as that either it's the moon sighting of Ramzan or the moon sighting for the Eid. On both the occasions, we have the full-fledged markets open for the whole night, where the Muslim population go out for shopping. The whole the streets, the houses, and all other places are decorated. And with the Muslim diaspora and the subcontinent diaspora moving to the different parts of the world, I believe they have taken along with them this tradition. And now what we witness that even in the European countries and the Western countries, we figure that the similar kind of vibe can be felt on the day of the sighting of the moon. So I believe that Chand Raat is something we can take that as a very good example, that a tradition that has garnered or nourished in the subcontinent and have been taken to the different parts of the world.
Sir, can you discuss the ways in which Ramadan serves as a platform for interfaith and intercultural dialogue in the subcontinent, and how this promotes greater understanding and cooperation between different communities?
So as I was mentioning about it, that it is very well accepted and respected by the individuals of all the faiths. And, you know, interfaith is something which is very important and very essential for the understanding and development of a religion and culture in any area. So we have always felt that whenever we are fasting, our brothers and sisters, they are very much concerned about us. Okay, so coming up with different questions like, do you you don't drink even water? Would you like to have some fruits if you are not having the food? So it when these kinds of questions come up, the curiosity they have, it helps us in bringing this topic with them quite easily. And they are very ready to listen to what is the objective behind fasting, why the Muslims fast for the whole month of Ramzan, and what are the timings of the fast, what we can do, what we cannot do. And when we are discussing all these aspects, it's always an opportunity for us that we can impart or we can bring them or accustom them to the basic understanding of the religion, the very purpose of the such an important obligation that is there on the community. So I believe that whole process, the kind of curiosity, the kind of vibe it generates, it gives us an opportunity to discuss about it with our brethren here. And in this process, this interfaith, intercultural dialogue, it is initiated, and it is an important occasion to discuss and educate our brethren about this whole process.
Sir, could you tell us about some of the unique cultural and religious practices associated with the celebration of Ramadan in South Asia, and how do they differ from other Muslim majority countries?
As I was mentioning to you about the Chand Raat, the night of the sighting of the moon, that is one thing which I have already deliberated upon, that how this the celebration of this particular night has reached out to the different parts of the world. Other than that, I believe that something which is very interesting about the Ramzan is the foods that are served. And if you go move from region to region, the foods will keep on changing. Like for an example, the region of Hyderabad, it is famous for its haleem during the month of Ramzan. And every year you will find the same stall. Other similar item can be roux afza. It's a kind of a drink which is very common in the regions of the subcontinent. And I believe you won't find that drink largely anywhere else. But the Indian subcontinent, every household in Ramzan, it is must for them to have roux afza. If we talk beyond the food, I think the the Jummatul Wida. If you look back, you won't find anything very concrete about Jummatul Wida, in the religious text, but the way it is observed, it is celebrated in the Indian subcontinent. Say, for example, in Iran, it is observed as Quds Day in support of the Palestinians. And in other different regions, there are different beliefs related to it. But in Indian subcontinent, it is observed like a festival within a festival. And there is a great deal. Other tradition can be the Sehri Walas. During the time of Sehri, Suhoor, there are people who come by reciting hams, naats, beating drums to wake the people up for this Suhoor. So these are the, some of the traditions which we can take into account if we are exploring the diversity in the Indian subcontinent with, in comparison to the rest of the world.
And last but not least, sir, how do non-Muslims in the Indian subcontinent participate in or support the celebration of Ramadan, and what impact does this have on interfaith relations?
Taking from the point where I have left previously, when I was in hostel, we were having the Hindu friends residing with us in the hostels. Even today, when we are in our work and system, our colleagues, we often find them, you know, they are at times, they, you know, keep fast along with us. When we are at a distance from the mosque, I had my colleagues dropping me to the mosque for the prayers, waiting outside the mosque for me to finish. Moreover, if you go to any of the street in India, even to the streets which are not dominated by the Muslim population, at the time of iftar, you will find that the shop owners, they do come out of their shops with the dates in their plates and water to offer, drinks to offer. So they understand that there might be someone who might not have reached the home, or they might be late in reaching out their homes. So the offering of these dates, the water, and this overall understanding is something where the communities basically gel in. We have friends visiting us with the food, visiting along with us to the food stalls, which are, you know, stalled during the holy month of Ramzan. So this gives a very, you know, India and the whole of the subcontinent is very proud of the diversity we have, the cultural diversity, the religious diversity, the linguistic diversity. But the way we get in, or the way we come together to celebrate any kind of festival, is something which is a good example for the world to see. And even for the holy month of Ramadan, the communities do come in together. There might be one or two instances out of the blue moon somewhere, but largely it is peaceful. The coexistence of the different religious, linguistic, and cultural communities or diversities even make it a wonderful experience where we can share different cultural associated with the holy month of Ramzan, and different people also being very enthusiastic about knowing about the holy month of Ramzan.
On that note, I would like to thank Mr. Ahmar Afaq from India for being on the program. Thank you, sir. Now, let's see what people around the world had to say.
B. Mahmoud tweeted, "I need Ramadan to come and fix my entire life. Allahumma balighna Ramadan." From a personal perspective, there hasn't been a Ramadan that I've needed like this one. My Lord, do not forbid us from the goodness it brings, though we are not deserving. Make us from those who win. Zahra wrote, "Literally can't wait for Ramadan iftar evenings and Sehri mornings, the gatherings over what Allah loves, like the whole vibe of the month where the hearts are at so much calm and peace, where it's just you and your Allah, where everything just pulls you closer to Him." Shehbaz Sharif tweeted, "Finalized Ramadan package today prepared by the Punjab government on my directions. Under this package, the poorest of the poor will be given flour free of cost. Federal government will work with other provinces to launch similar schemes for the benefit of people affected by inflation." Laila wrote, "I need Ramadan to bring that peace into my heart again, like it always does. It's come at a time where I really need it. Inshallah, we all get to experience another beautiful Ramadan this year."
And that was our episode on Ramadan in the subcontinent and various traditions and practices associated with the holy month. We should meet again next week. So till then, take great care.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat yek asle zinde ast dar tarikh Islam.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. Stay tuned. We will have nothing in this world and the hereafter if Allah does not give us the knowledge and power of discerning between good and evil. We are told in our Islamic narrations that we will be given divine rewards based on our own power of understanding the power of Allah. In better words, our share of rewards depends on our share of knowledge. This is why we pray to Allah. O Allah, bestow me the light of understanding. Compared to sports, we can claim that a faithful person is the one who is more obliged to do the duties based on the standards. Also in social life, a person who observes the laws is more respected by the law system. In religion, if a person is faithful to the rulings, he will be rewarded more by Allah. All in all, the more faithful you are, the more you will be honored by Allah in this world and the hereafter. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
the bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump has described the 2024 election as the final battle from a podium in Waco, Texas. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Donald Trump, the former US president, continued to invoke retribution and violence on Saturday, 25th of March, when he used the first rally of his 2024 election campaign to rail against prosecutors weighing a criminal charge against him. Efforts by Trump's team to steer a more conventional, disciplined candidacy have wilted in recent days as the 76-year-old unleashed words and images that, even by his provocative standards, are unusually dehumanizing, menacing, and dangerous. He opened the rally by playing a song, Justice for All, that features a choir of men imprisoned for a role in their 6th of January 2021 insurrection, singing the national anthem, intercut with Trump reciting the Pledge of Allegiance. Donald Trump stood solemnly on a podium with hand on heart, and footage from the Capitol riot was shown on big screens, and U.S. flags billowed in the wind. That song tells you a lot because it's number one in every single category, he told a crowd of thousands of people. Number two was Taylor Swift, number three was Miley Cyrus. The choice of location for the rally was also striking. Waco, a city in Texas, exactly 30 years after a 51-day standoff and deadly siege between law enforcement and the Branch Davidians that resulted in the deaths of more than 80 members of the religious cult and four federal agents. It came with Donald Trump facing the prospect of becoming the first president in U.S. history to be indicted. A grand jury in New York investigating a hush money payment to the film star Stormy Daniels, who alleges an affair with Trump, a claim that he denies. Trump falsely predicted his own arrest on Tuesday last week and called for protests without adding that they should be peaceful. On his Truth Social platform, he warned of potential death and destruction if he is eventually charged. He also used increasingly racist rhetoric as he launched ever more personal attacks against Alvin Bragg, the Manhattan district attorney, raising fears that supporters could try to lash out on his behalf. Donald Trump even shared an image of himself holding a baseball bat next to a picture of Alvin Bragg. Hakeem Jeffries, a Democratic minority leader in the House of Representatives, said, "The twice-impeached former president's rhetoric is reckless, reprehensible, and irresponsible. It's dangerous, and if he keeps it up, he's going to get someone killed." On Friday, a powdery substance was found with a threatening letter in a mailroom at Alvin Bragg's offices in New York. Officials later determined the substance was harmless. Yet at Saturday's rally at Waco Airport in Texas, there was little sign of Trump heeding the warnings and cooling off. Behind him, supporters held signs that said, "Witch hunt, I stand with Trump and Trump 2024. The 45th president repeated his false claim that the 2020 presidential election was rigged, praised the rioters of 6th of January 2021, and raged against the weaponization of law enforcement, branding the prosecutors overseeing multiple investigations into his conduct as absolute human scum. The website of Al Jazeera Television Network has also covered this story. Former U.S. President Donald Trump has held the first rally of his 2024 presidential campaign in Waco, Texas, railing against prosecutors investigating him and employing dark and conspiratorial language to fire up his base ahead of next year's Republican primary elections. Donald Trump, facing potential indictment, opened Saturday's rally by playing a song, Justice for All, that features a choir of men imprisoned for their role in the 6th of January 2021 insurrection at the United States Capitol, singing the national anthem and a recording of Trump reciting the Pledge of Allegiance. Some footage from the insurrection was shown on big screens at the rally in Waco. In his speech, Trump defended the insurrectionists, saying they will be vindicated, and described the investigations swirling around him as something straight out of the Stalinist Russia horror show. "From the beginning, it's been one witch hunt and phony investigation after another," he said. Donald Trump is being investigated by prosecutors in Manhattan for campaign finance violations stemming from his alleged payment of hush money to a film actress ahead of the 2016 presidential election. A special counsel appointed by the Department of Justice is also investigating allegations that he hoarded top-secret documents and masterminded a plot seeking to overturn the 2020 presidential election. Trump declared on Saturday that his enemies are desperate to stop us and our opponents have done everything they can to crush our spirit and to break our will. But they failed, he said. They've only made us stronger, and 2024 is the final battle. It's going to be the big one. You put me back in the White House, their reign will be over, and America will be a free nation once again. Trump held his rally at the airport grounds in Waco, Texas, as the city marked the 30th anniversary of a raid by federal agents on the Branch Davidians religious sect that resulted in 86 deaths, including four law enforcement officers. Many right-wing extremists see the raid as a seminal moment of government overreach, and critics saw the rally's timing as a nod to Donald Trump's far-right supporters. Donald Trump's campaign insisted the location and timing of the event had nothing to do with the Waco siege or its 30th anniversary. The Associated Press has also covered this story and tells us more. Facing a potential indictment, Donald Trump took a defiant stance at a rally Saturday in Waco, Texas, disparaging the prosecutors investigating him and predicting his vindication as he rallied supporters in a city made famous by deadly resistance against law enforcement. With a hand over his heart, Donald Trump stood at attention when his rally opened with a song called Justice for All, performed by a choir of people imprisoned for their role in the 6th of January 2021 insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. Some footage from the insurrection was shown on big screens displayed at the rally site as the choir sang the national anthem and a recording played of Trump reciting the Pledge of Allegiance. The extraordinary display opened Trump's first rally of his 2024 Republican presidential campaign. He then launched into a speech brimming with resentment and framed the probes, including a New York grand jury investigation, as political attacks on him and his followers. "You will be vindicated and proud," Donald Trump said. "The thugs and criminals who are corrupting our justice system will be defeated, discredited, and totally disgraced." Trump's event at the airport grounds in Waco, Texas, was part of a broader effort by the former president to use the potential indictment as a rallying cry for supporters to maintain his status as the Republican frontrunner in what is expected to be a crowded primary. It came just one day after Trump raised the specter of violence should he become the first former president in U.S. history to face criminal charges. Donald Trump declared his innocence in the Manhattan investigation into a hush money payment made during the 2016 election to an actress, Stormy Daniels, to keep her from going public about an affair she said she had with Trump years earlier. A grand jury hearing the case is expected to meet again on Monday. Donald Trump said the Manhattan District Attorney, Alvin Bragg, was investigating him for something that is not a crime, not a misdemeanor, and not an affair. Some of Trump's recent rhetoric, including at the rally, has echoed language he used before the Capitol insurrection by a mob of his supporters seeking to stop transfer of power to Joe Biden, who won the presidential election. Trump's eyebrow-raising choice of venue in Waco, Texas, for his first rally came amid the 30th anniversary of a 51-day standoff and deadly siege between U.S. law enforcement and the Branch Davidians that resulted in the deaths of more than 80 members of the religious cult and 4 federal agents, and has become a touchstone for far-right extremists and various militia groups. Trump's campaign insisted the location and timing of the event had nothing to do with the Waco siege and anniversary. A spokesperson said the site, 17 miles from the Branch Davidian compound, was chosen because it was conveniently situated near 4 of the state's biggest metropolitan areas, Dallas-Fort Worth, Houston, Austin, and San Antonio. Texas's Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick said before Donald Trump's arrival that he was the one who had suggested Waco as the venue for the rally.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we answer your questions, queries you have regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children. The answers are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations of Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, and his purified progeny. Well, parenting or child rearing promotes and supports the physical, emotional, social, spiritual, and intellectual development of a child from infancy to his adulthood. And the same relationship could actually go up somewhere and it could go down. Sometimes it can actually be supporting and sometimes it can be distorting. Now, today in our studio, we have with us a guest speaker, Professor Salman Nakavi, who is a faculty member at Al-Mustafa University. Assalamu alaikum, sir.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome.
Thank you very much.
Well, as we said, that parenting, it can be supporting, which is mostly in more cases, but it can be distorting if it's not done in the Islamic way. So what are the key points that could actually make child and parent relations some much better?
Yes, so important to remember is that in all relationships, we have certain general principles, whether it is relations between parents and their children or even other human beings. For example, it is very important to be truthful to each other. A parent should be truthful to his child, and also the child should be truthful.
So being truthful is the first thing.
Yes, it is important to be truthful. What is important is to realize what do we mean by being truthful. Sometimes we mean that truthful is a true person who is a person who does not lie, who does not speak in a manner which is avoiding the truth, or it is giving the some wrong perception or meaning or report. For example, you are doing something and then your child asks you, what were you doing? You try to avoid him or her and say, look, no, I wasn't doing that. I wasn't, for example, eating something which I shouldn't be or you shouldn't be. So, but more than that is truthful, being truthful in action. What does that mean? Truthful, being in truthful in action is more important than being truthful in speech.
In your words. In your words. Speech, yeah.
When you are truthful in your words, what does that mean? You have to, whatever you feel in yourselves, in deep inside you, you should also mention that or say that as it is within you. You shouldn't be hiding what you know. You shouldn't be hiding what you feel. That is by speaking out what is there in your mind, what is there in your heart.
All right, so...
But actions...
Actions speak louder than words.
Exactly.
Yeah. We'll get back to you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing, and we have had the pleasure to be with Professor Salman Nakavi. Professor, you were saying that one of the key points to develop a better parent-child relationship is to be truthful, and it's not just being truthful in your speech, but also in your actions.
Yes, exactly. So, when you're truthful in your words, it means that whatever you have in your mind, in your heart, you convey that to the other person. Whether it's your child or whether it's your partner, it's your spouse, it's your friend, being truthful is what you speak your mind.
So when you're actually truthful around your family, a child is watching and getting that sense of being truthful.
Exactly. So the child is learning how you behave, how you speak. And then the behavior is more important than the words. That you play a walk, as they say today, you walk your talk. What you say, you act accordingly.
Yeah.
Your actions should be in congruence with your words. What you say, you should be acting. You should be doing.
Yeah.
So, as they say,
watch your words, they become your actions. Watch
exactly.
your actions,
or,
they become
yes.
your...
The word is that your actions should prove your words.
Oh, all right. So there should be no...
When the Quran talks about the Siddiqeen,
yeah.
the people who are truthful, it actually is implying those people who are truthful in their actions and they act according to their words. What they preach, they act what they preach. They do what they preach.
So your actions should no way be contradicting your speech.
Exactly. That is important, especially for children, for teaching your children, training your children, bringing up your children. You cannot, as we have always been saying, that if you say, ask them to do something, you should be also doing it for them. You should also be showing them that if you tell them to pray on time, then you should be praying on time yourselves. So your actions should prove what you're saying, or your speech should be according to your actions. Therefore, it is very much important that if you have, for example, we always relate this this incident where the Holy Prophet of Islam was sitting in the mosque, in the masjid, and a lady comes up to him with her child, and she asks and requests the Holy Prophet to ask the child not to eat dates.
Yeah.
So, because maybe the dates were harmful, were going to be harmful for the child. So the Prophet does desists from doing that. He doesn't do so and says that let you come tomorrow. And the day after, when she comes again, the Prophet then advises the child and
not to eat enough dates.
Okay. So then he was asked by his companions, why was the case that you did not do so the day before? He said, because I had eaten dates myself on that day. So how could I have asked the child to not to do so while I had done so myself?
So yes, So practicing exactly on what Surah Saf says.
Practicing what you're preaching.
Yeah.
So though the child even does not, has not even seen the fact that the Holy Prophet had eaten the dates before that, or whether he had not, or whether he had, he did not know. But the words of the Holy Prophet means, so he implies that when you are saying something and you want to show sincerity and you want your words to be
show it this way.
Influential and they, you want them to change, bring about a change in other people, then
yeah.
you have to be acting and practicing
according.
What you preach.
Yeah. We'll discuss more with you, Professor Nagavi, after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, honor your children and teach them good manners.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing, and we have Professor Salman Nakavi with us. And Professor, you were saying that in order to develop a better parent-child relationship, there are certain key points. And the first you are mentioning with us is to be truthful and to be truthful in actions, as Prophet, peace be upon him, has been showing us. You also reminded me of the verses of Surah Saf, verse 2 and 3, which go on saying that, O the believers, do not say to others what you do not act upon yourself. So Prophet is actually not only practicing on Quran, but also whatever he's preaching, he's actually acting upon it very well. And since he is the preacher of Islam, so he has to be himself. So in this action, he's teaching also the leaders of the country so much things. He is teaching the parents so much things. And he is teaching all the advisors, which parents assume to become advisors of the children. He is teaching them that do not advise your children of something that you are not acting upon yourself.
Yes. So being truthful has different levels. It starts with speaking the truth, and then it goes on into actions and behavior. So this is one point which is very important for us to be following in all our relationships, and especially in the relationships which we have with our children. And and being truthful is the top virtue, is the most important virtue that a human being and a Muslim can have. Because in so many ahadiths we have this word that we say, this statement or this expression that as-sidq ra'su kulli khayr, if being truthful is at the root of each and every goodness that can, follows from that. All goodness follows from being truthful.
As they say that lying is a key to all the sins, and that's how truthful is becomes the key to all the goodness.
Exactly. So we need to be truthful, and then we need to, this issue of being truthful. So the question is, the second virtue which is important, the second attribute is loving people, loving human beings.
All right.
Loving them. Not because they're your children or they are, because they're human beings.
So a child should not be misunderstanding you that you're loving your child because just you have a biological relationship with your child. He should see that you have the love and affection for other human beings around them.
We should love all human beings because that is the manifestation of Allah's love for all of us.
Yeah.
Allah Almighty loves all His creations. We have also, I think, mentioned this in one of our previous discussions.
Yeah.
That Allah Almighty loves all human beings, all His creations, because He has created them. He has created them out of His love and His mercy. So the very creation of these human beings is a manifestation of that mercy and love. We also, being the creations of Allah, have to love His creations.
Yeah. So concluding our discussion, what we discussed today is that parent and child relationship can be made much more better by just applying a few things in the life, like just being truthful. And Professor Nakavi said, not being just truthful in your words, in your speech, but also being truthful in your actions. Professor Nakavi, thank you so much for being with us. And thank you so much to our listeners. In case you want to listen to our programs again, go back to our official website, that's parstoday.ir. And go to the tab COI, Call of Islam, and you'll find our old programs, the archive of our programs over there. And in case you have any queries for us or any questions, any feedback, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. You can also find us on the social media platforms by just typing Call of Islam Radio. Thank you so much for listening. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.